Well, hello. Welcome back. You're listening to another episode of Headlines here on the Sustainable Minimalist Podcast. I have four stories for you today that have to do with the environment, climate change, the state of our planet. Let's get right into the first story today. And I want to be upfront and say that this is not a news headline, so to speak. It's more something I read about in the newspaper that is really darn relevant to what we talk about on this show. And that, of course, is the Jevons paradox. But before we talk about the paradox, let's start by talking about LED light bulbs. In the 1990s, LED lights, and specifically multicolor LED lights, were invented by Japanese scientists. They researched for decades, and then the light bulb moment, see what I did there? Ooh, I'm so good at puns, came in the 1990s. The hope for these LEDs was that they would help to avert climate catastrophe by greatly reducing the amount of electricity we use. And that sounds like a reasonable assumption, right? Because LED lights use 90% less energy and they last about 18 times longer than the incandescents. So sounds good, right? Well, even though LEDs are now widely used, right? No one really has a problem with LED bulbs. They're just what we use. So even though LEDs are now widely used, they replaced the incandescents. Guess what? The amount of electricity we consume for light globally is roughly the same today as it was in 2010. Oh my goodness, yes. So the big hopes we had for LEDs didn't come to fruition. Why? Well, it's partly because of population growth and economic growth, specifically in the developing world. But guess what? Another big reason is that we have come up with ever more extravagant uses for these ever cheaper light bulbs. I'm talking immersive LED installations. I'm talking carpets that glow. I'm talking basketball courts that can play videos. So I'll say this another way. As the light bulb technology advanced, we human beings used more light bulbs. As technology advances, we human beings only grow more wasteful. That is the Jevons paradox. The Jevons paradox is named for the 19th century English economist William Stanley Jevons. Jevons noticed that as steam engines became more efficient, Great Britain's appetite for coal increased. Now, when we talk about emissions issues and wastefulness, you can see examples of the Jevons paradox everywhere. Think about the servers that are running the internet. Yes, the servers have come more efficient and less power hungry, but our use of the servers has skyrocketed. Let's go back to Britain for a minute. A few years ago, economists at Cambridge University found that when residents in England and Wales installed home insulation, so they insulated their houses better, their overall heating energy demand soon ended up at the same level it was before. So their home is more insulated, but they're using the same amount of energy to heat their homes. Why? It's because the residents had apparently chosen to turn up their thermostats and live in warmer homes. We have known about the Jevons paradox for years, but it's becoming a more troubling problem now that governments around the world have pledged to slow global warming by eliminating those net carbon emissions. And the reason is because a significant part of the elimination of net carbon emissions is expected to come from using more efficient products. So electric motors in our cars instead of internal combustion ones, LED light bulbs instead of the incandescents. But here's the logic of Jevons. Instead of banking the savings we get in terms of efficiency when we replace something inefficient with something more efficient, instead of saving, putting those savings in the bank for a later date, human beings, we go out and we spend those savings immediately. So if you are of the assumption that technology and innovation is going to get us out of our environmental problems, the Jevons paradox says, oh no, hold up, not so fast. When products get more efficient, it's human nature to consume more. Now, I do want to say there is some good news here. In some cases, efficiency gains are so great that even our human desire to spend those savings, we can't spend all of it. So LEDs, they are improving at such a rate that despite our desire to put lights in more and more places, commercial lighting demand in the US remains lower than it was a decade ago. How about cars? Today's car engines require so little fuel compared to their predecessors that even though Americans on average are now driving longer distances and heavier cars, overall, Americans' gasoline consumption has fallen. So that's the good news. The bad news is that, of course, this Jevons paradox is hardwired into our DNA. There are very few examples of people in history who have willingly consumed less energy, either for moral or environmental reasons. And so this brings us to the biggest problem of all and the reason why I wanted to cover it today. Almost every pathway that's been laid out for us by our lawmakers with regard to combating climate change and reducing global carbon emissions, nearly every single path that's been laid out assumes that not only are we going to switch to cleaner fuels, but, and this is the critical part, but we will also see global energy demand falling. And this is unprecedented, right? There are very few examples of people, of human beings in history, who have willingly given up a bit of the energy they consume. So I'll let you think on that as we move on to our second story, and it has to do with spring. Yes, we turned the clocks forward last weekend, and oh my goodness, it's been staying light out till 6:30 here in Massachusetts. It feels like spring, but it doesn't only feel like spring because we sprung our clocks forward. It's also feeling like spring because there are buds on the trees. There are daffodils popping up in my yard. I was out working in the yard the other day. And all these signs of spring, they would be so nice to see if it were mid-April and not mid-March. So I'm going to teach you a new word. I love learning new words. New word is phenology. P-H-E-N-O-L-O-G-Y. Phenology is the study of seasonal change. And the USA National Phenology Network reports the annual appearance of spring's first leaves in the contiguous United States. They've been reporting on that since 1981. First of all, did you know that there was a US National Phenology Network? Because I certainly didn't, but you learn new things every day. The US National Phenology Network did find that spring is trending earlier across very specific areas in the United States. So if you're looking at a map or have it pictured in your mind, picture the contiguous United States and then draw a U shape right on top of it. Where the U is the areas in which spring is happening earlier. Spring's arrival does appear especially accelerated in higher elevations in parts of California's Sierra Nevada, for instance. Trees that used to sprout leaves in mid-May are now doing so in early April. And so the reason why higher elevations are getting spring a little bit earlier, the reason why is unclear, but it could be that snow is growing scarcer in the mountains, and that allows the ground to absorb more of the sun's heat, which creates that feedback loop. Now, phenologists, who of course are scientists who study phenology, they don't look at buds on trees. They look instead at temperature. And that's because as winter fades out, plants respond to the gradual accumulation of heat. And so I read this story in the Washington Post, and the paper asked for readers to write in with what they're seeing in their United States location. So here are just a few of them. In Dallas, which, you know, is right near the U that I asked you to draw on your map, one man from Dallas, he moved to Dallas in 1986, and he always used to plant his tomatoes on March 17th. That was the date he knew to put his tomato plants in the ground. This year, he planted his tomato plants a month earlier in February. That's Dallas. In New Jersey, one man, he's been living there also since the 1980s. He knew, he had it in his brain, that strawberries always peak. Their harvest is ready. The strawberry harvest is ready just around June 11th, because June 11th was his son's birthday. So his son's birthday coincided with strawberry harvest. But these days, this man who wrote in said that he's seeing native strawberry plants peak a month earlier in May. In Vermont, let's talk about Vermont's famous maple syrup, right? You have to collect sap through a tap inserted into the trunk of a sugar maple tree, but you can't do it anytime. There's a very specific window of time to do it. You have to wait until the temperature is above freezing during the day, but below freezing at night. Those specific conditions act like a pump and bring the sap up from the tree's roots and into its trunk. Again, it's a process. But sugaring season used to be in March. So sugaring season, and when it's above freezing during the day and below freezing at night, it used to be March. Now, sugaring season has shifted into January and February. And I know this to be true because I saw in January and February the sugar stacks going. And finally, in my backyard in Boston, we have magnolia trees and they're gorgeous. Historically, they don't bloom till May, maybe the week before Memorial Day. Guess what? Now they are blooming their magnificent blooms in mid-April, so five-ish, six-ish weeks early. So you're not imagining it. In many places throughout the United States, spring is happening a good month earlier. We're going to take our quick ad break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about palm oil, Malaysia, and new European rules. I'll see you in a minute. Mother's Day is around the corner, and I have the best gift idea for you. Hold on to your hats. It's mylifeinabook.com. Every week, My Life in a Book will send your mom a question via email. They will compile all of your mom or the mom in your life's answers and create a legacy keepsake book. The book becomes something you and future generations can treasure forever. I gave both my mother and my mother-in-law My Life in a Book, and they've already started responding to the prompts. When my mother-in-law received her first prompt, she said, "Oh my goodness, what a thoughtful gift." And that's what we all want, right? We all want to give thoughtful gifts. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day, mylifeinabook.com, and use code SUSTAINABLE for 10% off today. If you've been paying attention, you've likely heard something about gut health and why zoning in on your gut health is so darn important. You need EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense. It's a 3-in-1 capsule that supports your digestive health and promotes gut barrier protection. I started taking EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense because I have a bloating problem, friends. Yes, I do. Inflammation is not my friend. Since taking one capsule a day on an empty stomach with water, I have noticed more energy, improved skin, and here's the big one, reduced bloating. Head to myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE for 15% off Equilibria's microbiome defense and so much more. That's myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. And we're back. Before the break, we discussed the Jevons paradox, and we also discussed the sooner arrival of my favorite season, spring. It's my favorite season, but it shouldn't be here yet. It's not a happy day that spring's here. We're moving on now to the European Union. Last May, the EU signed into law the European Union Deforestation Law. And this law will require producers of cattle, cocoa, coffee, palm oil, soy, rubber, and wood to provide proof that their supply chain is entirely free of deforestation. Many consumers, perhaps you, definitely me, we want to make sure that when we're buying a product, the entire supply chain that had its hand in the creation of this product is free of deforestation. We want to make sure that trees weren't cut down to create this thing, right? And this new EU deforestation law is in response to the fact that 78% of Europeans believe that governments should ban products that drive deforestation. And it makes sense, right? Our world's forests help remove planet-killing greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. And so not only has this law been hailed as a gold standard in climate policy, but also the law seeks to protect forests because traders are going to have to trace the origins of a variety of products to ensure that lands were not cut down of trees to create them. It sounds great, right? Well, wait a minute. Developing countries, specifically Indonesia and Malaysia, have expressed outrage. These two countries, Indonesia and Malaysia, supply 85% of the world's palm oil. Palm oil, by the way, is one of the seven commodities covered by the European Union's ban. They maintain that this new EU law puts their economies at risk. And let me just say, too, if you don't know anything about palm oil, or specifically the link between palm oil and deforestation, you need to go back and you need to listen to episode number 187 of this show. It was a thorough and comprehensive look at exactly why palm oil is a major environmental problem. My interview was with a journalist who spent years of her life in the oil palm fields studying this product. Listen to the episode. It's in the show notes. But Malaysia's environment minister said, quote, "We're not questioning the need to fight deforestation, but it's not fair when countries that have deforested their own land for centuries can unilaterally impose conditions on us," end quote. Anti-poverty advocates, too, are also concerned because a lot of small farmers in Malaysia and Indonesia don't even know about this new law, let alone know how to be in compliance. So they're going to be in trouble next year, in financial trouble next year when the law takes effect. If they don't even know that there is a new law, how are they going to be able to prove that their farm is in compliance? Which, by the way, of course, is a complex and lengthy process. And that's if they can even provide the documentation needed to begin with. Let's not forget that the cultivation of palm oil from oil palm trees is extremely environmentally detrimental, yes, but the palm oil gold rush has helped reduce poverty and build wealth. Roughly 4.5 million people in Malaysia and Indonesia work in the industry. And so one more criticism of this law, too. I mean, everybody's going to criticize everything, right? Even with the best of intentions. But this criticism in particular, I found to be interesting, let's say. There is the criticism that the legislation is very good at preventing European countries from consuming products associated with deforestation, but the legislation is not necessarily any good at reducing deforestation itself. It's more about getting rid of the problem, let's say, than solving the problem. So some interesting thoughts there. And before we say goodbye, let's go really quick to Australia. We're going to Australia. Hi to my Australian listeners. I know there's a good amount of you. Well, say what you will about the United States, but the United States has gotten one thing right. America introduced automobile fuel emission standards in the 1970s. Much of the world has introduced them as well. But you know who's only now introducing fuel emission standards? Take a guess. The answer surprised me. The answer is Australia. Russia, Turkey, and Indonesia are the only other G20 nations without any mandatory fuel emission standards. So Australia, I tend to think of you as ahead of the curve when it comes to environmental progression, for when it comes to progressiveness in terms of environmental issues. But here, what's going on? The Prime Minister's center-left Labour government has finally introduced a plan to limit the average emissions of automobiles a carmaker sells in Australia each year. Companies will still be able to sell high-emitting vehicles, but they will have to offset them with less polluting cars, and if they don't offset them, they're going to have to pay penalties. These regulations would bring Australia in line with the United States on this issue by 2028, so in just 4 years. Now, I want to be clear and say that the standards that the Australian Prime Minister has introduced, it's common sense legislation. It's common practice around the world. And yet, some Australians are angry. The Australians who are angry do tend to be more conservative. They tend to be tradesmen and tradeswomen. Specifically, they drive a very specific car. I had never heard of this car before, but it's called a ute. Ute is an abbreviation for utility. It's basically a car with a truck bed on the back. I would call it kind of like a pickup truck. Well, the ute is known in Australia as being the symbol of the tradesman class. And Australians listening, if I'm getting this wrong, please let me know. But the vehicle speaks to a way of life. And so for those of us who know, you might not know what a ute is, but you certainly likely know what a pickup truck is. You know that pickup trucks often have higher fuel emissions than other models. And yes, some popular Australian cars emit almost 50% more pollutants than their overseas counterparts. Opposition figures who do not like this proposed legislation, they call this a, quote, war on utes and a war on tradies. And so this pushback on very common and worldwide emission standards, what does it tell us? Like, what's the bigger picture? It tells us that perhaps the climate wars in Australia, they are still perhaps going strong. Treating climate change as a culture war. That's nothing new in Australia. And with regard to a variety of topics, renewable energy is another big one in which not everyone's on board. Recently, hundreds of people gathered outside Parliament to protest reckless renewables. That's a quote from their signs, reckless renewables. And a conservative senator who also happens to be a climate change skeptic called renewable energy projects a, quote, scam. So Australia, I must say I'm shocked, but I will definitely be paying attention as this proposed fuel emission standards advances. That's our show today. We'll be back on Tuesday where we're discussing family dinners. Let's all go back to family dinners, shall we? That's Tuesday. I'll see you then and take care.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.